Welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley, that dude.
Yes, sir.
Coming up, we'll tell you if Jerry Jones' big mouth is actually helping the Cowboys.
And if Luke Walton's days with the Lakers are numbered. Dead man walking, but we start today with a Whitlock. What you got today, big guy?
All right, tonight's Saints-Cowboys clash feels a little bit like the original Rocky movie. Think about it. Mm. Dak Prescott is Rocky Balboa, a struggling tomato can being fed for slaughter to one of the all-time greats, Drew Apollo Creed Breeze. Hmm. Cowboys owner Jerry Jones is Mickey Goldmill, an old washed-up former contender who sees potential in Dak Prescott. Saints coach Sean Payton, he's Tony Duke Evers, the best quarterback trainer in the world and Breeze's hype man. Tonight is the Dak attack versus Little Breezy. Mm. Trying harder now, gonna fly now. All right, okay.
Please.
We know Breeze is probably gonna win the MVP trophy this season. Sean Payton is probably gonna be the NFL's coach of the year, and Jerry Jones is a football immortal. He's already in the Hall of Fame. But don't get it twisted. Dak Prescott is the star in tonight's movie. He's the quarterback of America's team. He's the feisty underdog who can cash a lottery ticket by going 15 rounds with Little Breezy. Just like Rocky Balboa, Dak is the main reason to tune in tonight. There's nothing more compelling than an underdog story, especially one with this much cash riding on the outcome. If Dak Prescott delivers the performance of his life, Jerry Jones is gonna make it rain on the third-year quarterback this offseason. Jerry has called this game a Super Bowl for the Cowboys. Super Bowl quarterbacks get paid. If Dak plays poorly tonight, things will get very dicey for him. Jerry will still believe in him, but I'm not sure anyone else will. Jerry will still give him a contract extension, but the deal will leave enough wiggle room for the Cowboys to draft a quarterback this offseason. Like Rocky, Dak doesn't need to win this fight. He simply needs to be good enough to make Jerry believe a rematch next season is possible. I think Dak's going to do it. I think he's going to have one of the best statistical games of his career. He'll throw 3 touchdown passes and for nearly 300 yards. Why do I believe this? Some things are just meant to be, and I believe the pressure and the hype of this game are going to make Dak play slightly above his head. Is Breeze going to cut the Cowboys up and close both of Dak's eyes? Yeah, probably. But come late in the fourth quarter, Dak's going to be on his feet throwing haymakers, and the Saints will know they were in a fight. And when the clock expires, expect to see Jerry down on the field screaming Dak's name and Dak screaming Jerry's name as they fight through the post-game crush of humanity to embrace and express their mutual love. Yo, Dak, don't let me down. All right, joining the desk now are former AFC North rivals James Harrison and T.J. Housmanzada. Guys, play nice. Marcellus, yeah, I'll start with you. I'm hopeful about Dak, Rocky Balboa, Prescott.
Yeah.
Are you?
I'm hopeful. I'm certainly rooting for this. I need to see the haymakers and not in the closing rounds, in the opening rounds. I need Dak to go for broke. The stage is set for him to go out there and light it up. This is why. Despite having Ezekiel Elliott there, you're going against the number one run defense. So that may be a wash right there, and it's going to fall on your lap if you're Dak Prescott. And this is the stage. This is a Super Bowl in the eyes of your owner. But you live to play another day, which is amazing. So Dak Prescott, who has a conservative mindset at the quarterback position, plays it safe, doesn't turn the ball over, but also doesn't throw a ton of touchdowns and a ton of yards. Now you can get out of fourth gear. Gun it. Go sixth gear, Dak Prescott. Let's see what happens, because you will fall on the owner's words and still live to fight another day. This is a lottery ticket, as you said. This is the perfect opportunity for Dak to say, let me bust out my shell and show you what I'm really worth. And if he doesn't show it tonight, I don't know when Dak will ever show that sixth gear.
He can change his entire perception tonight with a big game.
It's one game. It's against the Saints. And if the Cowboys win this game, in my opinion, it's the defense and the run game. That's how they're going to win the game. Dak Prescott hasn't been the quarterback that can single-handedly take over a game and just do it by himself. The Cowboys defensively are really strong. That defensive line is really good. If they can slow the Saints down and keep them to 28, the 31 points, they have a chance. But can the Cowboys score that many points? That's the thing. Right. Amari Cooper, do they match up Marshawn Lattimore on him, or do they put Eli Apple and roll the safety over the top like they did against Julio Jones in Atlanta? So you just don't know how the Saints are going to play it. But it's the Saints, they're really good on offense, and they're really damn good on defense as well. So for Dak Prescott, it's tough sledding for him. Tough sledding.
I mean, he can change the perception if he goes out there. He can start to change it. It won't totally go away because he still has a number of years that aren't actually, he hasn't showed that he can continually go out there and be a franchise quarterback and give you that, I'm going to win the game for you. You know, I'm going to go out here, I'm going to sling it, 30 or 40 times. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get you 303 tugs, and I'm going to do that, once every two or three games, something like that. He has maybe four or five games total that he's had passed over 300 yards?
Yeah, exactly.
So
in his career.
In his life. Right, right. So right there, that's a hard hill to climb up, but he can start to try and change that perception if he does it. Me personally, I don't believe he'll be able to do it.
Why don't you believe he'll be able to? You just don't think
he's any? I don't think he has the consistency that he can regularly hit targets on the go. He's shown that, over the course of time. And he's really had a run game to lean on from day one. He's never been asked to actually sit in the pocket and be that guy that has to throw 30, 40 times a game and go out there and win the game for
him. A lot of it, too, though, is play calling. Play calling matters in games like this. Your offensive coordinator can design plays because, certain down the distance, a defense, we going to do what we do. You guys are going to play to certain. If they can design plays where the read is very defined for Dak, and guys can come open just by the design of the play, but the Cowboys, they're going to need Amari Cooper to be very special, and Dak just has to get him the ball.
Hold on. Listen, I think this is apropos for TJ and James because neither one of you guys were drafted high, I don't believe. Second-round pick. Dak Prescott is in a unique position because Jerry's put a special emphasis on this game and this season, but particularly this game, and it's the Saints, and they're the juggernaut, and everybody thinks they're great. I've never really seen a player that can make so much money off of one regular season game. In the postseason,
he definitely has that opportunity because, like you said, the owner himself has said, this is our Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Dak go out there and light them up, and he
knows.
Yeah, he's going to get paid. He's going to get paid.
But is it in him is the
well.
Conversation. But
everybody keeps saying, he's in the game. He's there with this opportunity.
It can get real ugly real fast. Now, think about this. Mm. The reason that the Saints had the number one rush attack is they don't have to worry about rushing the ball a lot, defending the rush a lot, because at the end of the day, Drew goes out there and they're up by, two touchdowns, and all of a sudden the other team is playing pass.
Playing catch-up football.
Right, we're playing catch-up, and now I get to unleash this D-line, and just no more are we worrying about the run. We're just trying to get to the quarterback.
But I'm asking all three of you, put yourself in Dak's
position. If I'm Dak,
with all this money sitting out on the table, you telling me
me personally, if I'm Dak Prescott, I'm coming out no holds barred, straight up.
No, you're not.
What?
No, you're not. What you will do is what you have done because that's led to your success to this level. What you should do is what we're sitting here comfortably in a studio with air conditioning on saying, if I were there, I would. You know what he's going to do? He's going to hand the ball off to Zeke and everybody's going to say, first down run.
Listen,
you know
if I'm there, I'm going to give everything I got to do what I got to do. I came in undrafted. I didn't have a first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth round. When they gave me an opportunity to jump out there, I gave you everything I had. I ball to the wall to get
had
exactly,
no choice.
No question.
And James Harrison.
See,
I'm
and it's
looking
exactly
in your
what
eyes.
Jason just second round. You don't know nothing about that.
We
know about that.
But you can't do that at his position because his position.
Why not? He got control of everything. You know what?
No,
I saw something.
Not.
I'm an audible this.
Have you ever seen Dak Prescott ever come one out of his skin?
We've never seen him in this spot, Marcel.
I got a chance to make $30 million.
He lives in
all the way out my skin.
Look, this is the key. It's not playing out of control. This is what I mean. If I see Amari Cooper man-to-man, you're getting the ball.
No matter what.
You're getting the ball
because
you've shown me over the last 3 weeks you can get it done.
Yes.
Amari Cooper, you got man-to-man. That's that wink nod. I'm coming to you. Give
but
me your
best. But he's done that before. Amari Cooper had 180 yards receiving, right?
Maybe he had 300 some change this time.
And did Dak have 300 yards passing that game? No.
But
that's
they
the
won the game.
Okay. he's going to try and win the game. Now you're coming to my point.
No, no, I'm still on numbers.
He's going to try and win the game. He doesn't care about 300 yards passing. He doesn't care about the things that you're saying is going to cash that lottery ticket. He's just trying to say, I want to keep pace with these Saints. Y'all forget that the Saints can mail in on average 37 points, which they average every game.
Yeah.
And then the Cowboys have only scored 37 points once this year. Dak Prescott knows that. Dak Prescott is going to say, rely on my defense, rely on my run game, play my game, and it's going to come to me.
Complete.
He doesn't have your mindset, and he doesn't have your mindset.
He needs to complete 70% of his passes. Ezekiel Elliott run for about 120 to 150 yards, and the Cowboys will – they'll win this. If he can complete 70% of his passes, they're going to win the game. They're going to win the game.
I think Marcellus is moving you off the conversation a little bit, TJ.
In terms
of we've never really seen a player in this spotlight, Thursday Night Football, Saints, Cowboys, huge game, mm-hmm. Troy, Joe Buck, all that money to be made if I just ball out. Can you imagine what this dude has been thinking all week? I'm serious. And just – you guys have been there, and even Marcellus, you've been playing at Columbia, no one thinking much of you. You can play above your head.
No, you can't. I told you yesterday what John Wooden said, and I told you.
You can play above your head,
that's when you get in trouble, because you got to want. There's no such thing as 110%. People, stop lying to yourself. That meant the day before you were going 90%.
There's a level of focus.
You know what I'm saying? Can people stop with this? This is, look, Dak, if Dak falls into this trap, it's over quick. I'm going to go out there and do something I haven't practiced in 3 years of playing. I'm going to go out there in a game condition to do something I haven't done in 3 years of game conditions. You go out there with that mindset and don't let the
game
come to you.
Nobody's saying do that. I'm saying when Amari Cooper has man-to-man, he's getting the ball. That's who I'm looking to. His mentality is not to take chances because that's who he's been.
And he's going to change it
but
tonight.
But that's not taking a chance by saying I'm going to Amari Cooper. That's I'm going to be smart here, and when I see man-to-man, I'm going to try to get him the ball. That's just not his mentality.
I love your presentation because it makes sense. It's rational. It's logic. But it's counterproductive. If you go out there and say, I got this opportunity, if I beat this guy every time, and don't go into your setup moves. You know how I go, James. You just can't just go out there and say, here's my best thing.
No question.
Play one.
You can't throw it at him.
What do you see?
You got to set it up.
They win the game. What does Dak get per year? Average?
If Dak is a critical component in them winning the game tonight, I see Dak getting 22 to 23 million.
What? I see him getting that if they lose.
I
think Jerry's trying to get him at a really affordable 16, 17. Yeah, I really do. I think he's trying to get him there. But listen, and this is, y'all going to lose me when I make this analogy. Y'all going to go off on me. but I'm just telling you, people can go to a higher level. They can go someplace mentally where they normally can't get. Look, Muhammad Ali had no business beating George Foreman, but that moment was so big, and he got so into himself and so into his religion and bought into this belief that God wanted him to beat George Foreman. That's how he survived that and knocked out George Foreman. I think we're going to, again, I'm not comparing him to Muhammad Ali because he's not the greatest. But I just think Dak is going to go to another level that even he didn't know because there's so much opportunity out there. His focus this week, the dreams and the thoughts he's had going through his head, this opportunity is so huge. I think he's going to step
up in
this
moment.
We are
the world. Let's hold hands. If
it doesn't start off well for him psychologically, it can kill him.
It can crumble you right there.
He's putting so much pressure on himself heading into the game that psychologically it's like, oh my God, I got
to
play so well.
Preparing yourself to do that or preparing yourself to go into a game and play well and then getting into that game and all of a sudden now you're in that zone. I've been in that zone where I feel like, you know what? It ain't nothing this tackle could do to stop me.
Yeah.
But it's not like I started the game like I'm coming in. It ain't nothing this tackle could do. It ran into that. It was like anything I threw, I could throw my hand here. He looked at it and come back inside. It was just in that course of that game, I had a belief that it's nothing.
And team sports is different than the individual sports. So boxing, I get that. You can bring all your will to the equation and deliver it. In team sports, I still need you.
What if my defense,
they ain't thinking about the lottery ticket? What if my running game is off because that's the number one run?
It's what he said. If Dak plays well and the defense plays bad, Dak held up his end of the bargain.
What if the receivers are not on the same accord with
Dak? Well, that's an issue. But here's the issue that I've seen with Dak. Sometimes he gets inaccurate. Mm-hmm. I think his footwork gets out from underneath him. His arm isn't exact. I think he's going to be in that zone where he's more, where it's the best version of Dak.
I love that.
For four quarters in a row. Yeah. He's more accurate. I do think when he sees Amari one-on-one, he's going to let it rip because he knows that's the only way we can win this game. Mm. If I play a conservative and just dump it here to Zeke and pass up this opportunity to be on the money to Amari Cooper, I'm costing us a chance to win the game. I just think we're going to see the absolute best version of Dak tonight.
Agree.
And again, I still think Drew Brees is going to win it.
We in for a treat tonight.
So this is amazing what you're setting up right now. Because the only negative I have of Dak is that he just plays it too safe, which contributes to his numbers being lesser than his talent. But if he goes there with that mindset, and I don't know what's going to unleash it other than this is
opportunity.
Right. But Dak has had in 3 years, he's had other opportunities. When you replace Tony Romo and you're like, I'm a four-stringer starting in my first year, that's opportunity.
You know what will play a part in this as well is the first 10 plays that are scripted. Will they be conservative or will they be aggressive? That will play a part into it.
The play calling.
Everybody, we all know the first 5-6 plays, the first third and short, the first third and long. That will give him an opportunity mentally to say, okay, we're going to be aggressive or we're going to play it safe and let our defense and run game keep us in the game. And we don't know how they're going to approach it from a coaching staff perspective.
I got one more for you, Marcellus.
Okay.
Just think you said something about his rookie year and the way he played.
Yeah.
Tony Romo standing on the sidelines over his shoulder. If he falls off at any point, all year we heard chirps, should they go back to Tony? Should they go back to Tony? And it brought out the best in Dak. You got to put pressure on some of these people to get them to perform. And again, Dak may ball out tonight and fall right back into the inconsistent guy later. But I think there's so much pressure on him tonight, so much conversation. This is a big game. Jerry Jones has done told him publicly and privately, dude, you do it tonight,
you
make it real easy for me to cut this check.
Yes.
And
you think he is?
Yes. I think he's going to be.
Jerry Jones will pay you.
I know. I'm sitting here. Yeah. This is his suit. this Jerry right here. Yeah. But
it's the opportunity of a lifetime, man.
I'm rooting for it, but I don't believe it's going to happen, man.
So everybody tune in to Fox. It's going to be a good game tonight.
Right. James Harrison and T.J. Houspenzada are back. Time for a big story. Sponsored by Wingstop. Mm. We don't just make wings. We make wings worth obsessing over.
Eat.
Apparently, the Saints agree and actually consider Wingstop their good luck charm, eating from there every week during their 10-game win streak. At this point, New Orleans is sitting at the top of the NFC and coming to tonight's game in Dallas as huge favorites. I don't think the Saints are under any pressure, and I think they could be headed for a letdown tonight. All the pressure tonight is on Dallas. Mm. Their owners called it the Super Bowl. As we just talked about, Dak Prescott's got millions of dollars on the line. The Saints are well out in front of their division. They're 10-1. Everybody expects them to blow these guys out tonight. The Cowboys are talking all this trash. DeMarcus Lawrence, all of Dak, they put their pants on one leg at a time. All the pressure's on Dallas. I don't think that's a good thing for the New Orleans Saints. I think they could have a bit of a letdown. Not saying they'll lose the game, but I don't think we're going to see their best performance tonight.
I don't think all the pressure's on Dallas. I think there is some pressure on New Orleans. Think about it. You described everything with pressure as you have something to gain, Dak Prescott. You have something to gain, Jerry Jones making this a Super Bowl. So they feel the pressure because they're motivated to get that game. But there's also pressure in situations you can lose something. If you're the Saints, you better not lose to the Cowboys. They're 6-5. You're 10-1. This can be a trap game. This can be a letdown game. So there's pressure for you not to play down to your opponent. It's a little early for Lock It In. I know that show comes on after us, but I got my numbers. I got my percentages right here. And here's the percentages that's going to happen tonight in terms of win and loss. 90% chance that the Saints beat the brakes off the Cowboys. Like, I love you, Fox, but people tuning off in the fourth quarter. Like, this game over. All right, there's an 8% chance that the Saints keep it close, but they still prevail. Mm-hmm. There's a 2% chance that the Cowboys win a close one. I ain't leave any other percentages. Why? Because the Cowboys ain't beating the brakes off of the Saints. So the point of this is, most of what we're going to watch today is just the setup, and it's going to be the programming of the Saints annihilating the Cowboys. That's just how I see it.
And that's why they're going to have a letdown, because they probably believe the same thing as you.
I see no letdown. Like you said, you got them over there talking trash. I think if they had just went in and were quiet and didn't kick the sleeping dog or the sleeping giant, so to speak, I think they would have had a chance to have the Saints come in there and, you know, be a little groggy, thinking, you know, we're just going to come in here and walk over the Cowboys, and they have a chance to go ahead and stick it to them. But now you're talking about choking them out and doing everything else. They woke. And now you're without your starting left tackle, possibly. Or I think they said that he is going to be out. Now, you know, Cam Jordan, all those boys over there, they're licking their chops like, ooh. Now we're going to get a chance to have some Dak.
Who that?
Who that?
No.
Medium rare.
Yeah.
All away.
Saints are 10-1. The Rams are 10-1. Mm. The Saints have to play. They won home field advantage in the playoffs. Yeah. So they have to take this game serious. If the Saints lose this game, it's not a letdown, because they have a lot on the line. It's not just that they're playing the Cowboys. They're playing for home field advantage. But the Cowboys defensively – this will go back. This game and next week's Rams-Chicago game will show, is defense really gone in the NFL? Because defensively, the Cowboys are pretty good, and the Bears are pretty good. If they can slow the Saints down, it won't be a letdown. The Cowboys will win the game if they win it. It won't be the Saints. It will be their defense in the running game doing well, because the Saints, they have a lot to play for. It's home field advantage.
Listen, I don't know if any of you all are gamblers. You talked about gambling earlier. But there are some points as a gambler when you push all your chips into the middle of the table. Mm. And you might be holding a bad hand, and you might just be bluffing. But you've still pushed all your chips into the middle of the table, and you're desperate. And so that's what the Cowboys have done. Jerry Jones pushed some chips into the middle of the table. DeMarcus Lawrence started talking about, we're going to choke him out, push some chips into the middle of the table. And whether the Cowboys have the cards or not, it doesn't matter. They're going to enter this game desperate, because they've written checks that they have to cash.
Man, they got a chance, though. We sitting here back and like, it's Mike Tyson in the late 80s, and we going to the fight, and it's like, it's over. Mm. They have, defensively, the Cowboys, they have a chance,
TJ,
man. They have a chance. Like,
they got a bad hand, and they pushing it in there, and I respect that.
Right.
And Michael Thomas is on the other side.
I'm saying they got a bad hand, and everybody else is just going ahead throwing their money in there, and they sitting over here with a royal flush. Like,
that's Michael Thomas face up, too. He like, all right, keep going,
bro. You see all this?
Boy, they mail in 37 points.
Cowboys, y'all not, like, you 2%, that's disrespectful.
No way, it ain't.
That's disrespectful.
Well, the Cowboys,
they playing at home, Marcellus.
Okay. That's why it's 2%, he said.
Can the Cowboys beat the Saints in a blowout fashion?
No, they can't beat
them. You're adding up my percentages, all right? I said zero. So now, can the Cowboys win the game?
Yes, they can.
Would you put all your chips, your whole
life? No, I'm not.
Well,
I'm not.
Then you're at 2%.
You would give them better than a 2% chance.
Can we bet straight up?
Yeah, I would put my 20% chance that the Cowboys win this game.
Oh.
Yeah. Right. And I think there's a 30% chance that they make it close. So that's 50%. And there's a 50% chance New Orleans wins in a blowout. But I'm just sorry. Dallas has too much riding on this to get blown out. It would devastate their season. If they've talked all this trash and
Jada, if they make it close and don't and lose, then it's cool. It's still cool.
In Dallas's mind, look, they playing without Smith, their left tackle.
It's no moral victories, but it's moral victories.
No.
There's moral victories.
No. It's no moral victories. I don't believe in moral victories, because at the end of the day, you know, we played close, but we lost Super Bowl. I don't get a moral victory Super Bowl.
No.
That's the Super Bowl.
That's a Super Bowl. This is a Super Bowl.
But they still have time to recover. They can still, hey, man, Amari's only been here 3 or 4 weeks. We're going to get better. Dallas believes it's an ascending team. The Saints, I don't think people are sitting around going, well, the Saints going to be better at the end of the season than they are right now. I don't think anyone's thinking that.
Yeah.
The Saints have shown us exactly who they are at optimum level. The Cowboys haven't. And so, yeah, I think the Cowboys are on an upswing and they're ascending. And if they had Smith, I'd feel a little bit better. But even without Smith, I just think if they play it close, they can leave that game and say, you know what, if Tyron Smith's here next time, Dak and Amari will be a little bit better, I like the way this club is trending. I'm just when you put that many chips into the middle of the table, man, it's going to be a fight, man. Everybody's a professional football player.
I will agree with that assessment because there's going to be a different recovery based on win and loss. So if the Saints go out there and win, duh. If the Saints go out there and lose, they can still fall back on the confidence, say, hey, man, you know what? We got caught slipping. We needed a wake-up call. We won 10 straight. You know, maybe you got to lose one to wake up. But you look at the Cowboys, if they struggle, it's going to fall on two people. It's going to fall on two sets. Dak in that passing game. And it's going to fall on that defense because now people are going to say, oh, y'all not as good as I thought you were. Zeke can have a bad game tonight, and Zeke next week, we still going to believe it's Zeke. He's the only one as Teflon in the loser situation. Everybody else, they're going to have skepticism. They're going to have clouds over them. So, Dallas, I think
I believe that defense is going to show up. I really do. I believe Dallas' defense is going to keep Drew Brees in check, if that makes any sense. He's going to put up his points, but I think they'll show up.
James Harrison and TJ Husmanzada are back. Let's return to Dallas, where Jerry Jones has been talking up tonight's Cowboys-Saints matchup all week, saying his team needs to treat it like the Super Bowl. I wasn't a fan of Jerry's comments until a local news outlet pointed out that every time Jerry has opened his mouth this year, the team has responded. When Jerry compared Dak Prescott to Jared Goff, the Cowboys went out and had a season high in yards. When he promised to give Dak an extension, Dak had one of his best games of the year. And when he said his team could compete with the NFL's top offenses, Dallas scored 30 and put up 400 yards. All right, this is not ideal what Jerry's doing.
Right.
Sitting here in Los Angeles. Jerry sits in Dallas and has a very good relationship with the guys in that locker room. I think he knows what emotional buttons to push. And as I've been talking throughout the show, I think you got to put pressure on Dak Prescott. I think he's putting the right pressure on his team to get them to play an incredible performance tonight on Thursday night football. I think it's actually going to work.
I think it's helped, certainly. This three-game win streak certainly was driven by Jerry Jones and what were deemed as outlandish comments, but inspiring comments in the locker room. Publicly supporting Dak Prescott when he wasn't playing his best football, already outwardly negotiating with a guy and telling him, hey, man, you're secure. I don't know why you're out there even thinking about this. Play your game. We got you. He's our quarterback for the next decade. All of a sudden, Dak Prescott starts playing his best football to the point where last week he played his best game this year. So I can see where it's working. And Jerry Jones, the great businessman he is, has a tremendous acumen in terms of personal skills and also how to deal with the mighty dollar. And Jerry Jones just basically read the manual. You guys read that book, The Secret, that came out? Y'all remember that thing? A few years ago, Speak It Into Existence. Yeah. Was like, everyone took it away from it. Speak It Into Existence. And you can, today, you go on somebody's Instagram story, and speak it to existence. I'm going to be a millionaire. No, you're not. But you know what? Jerry Jones was speaking to existence. Dak Prescott is our franchise quarterback. He believed it. He bought in. I think Jerry knows which button to push.
Well, I was set to go against that and say that it was a bad idea until I saw the numbers over there. So I'm going to say it's good for the Cowboys now. obviously, they listen to what he say, and the things that he says, it puts good pressure on them, and they go out there and they perform well to it. But I still don't see them winning this game.
I know
we'll
you're doing. Wait a second.
We'll get to that in a minute.
Look at that face.
Hate him or love him with Jerry Jones, he publicly had Dak Prescott's back when he was playing at his worst.
Yes.
Jerry Jones is an owner that if you're on his team, he has your back. And so when he comes out and speaks like this, as a player, you want to perform. Because the mind controls the body. So he said what he said so that the guys could really start to visualize, like, we can win this game. If we put our minds to it, we're going to go through anything to try to get this W. You want this owner, we're just as good as this team. We score 30 points. Oh, our offense just good. We put up 400 yards. Mm-hmm. And so he's trying to get his team to believe in what they can do, and I'm with him. We're going to get a close game just because of the way Jerry has come out and put the pressure on his team, but when he's done that, they've delivered.
James, you made your career in Pittsburgh playing for the Rooneys. They have the great reputation, spotless reputation or whatever. What do you think of the Rooneys or in comparison to Jerry? Would you have preferred to have played for a Jerry Jones, an outspoken, fun-loving, friend of the player's owner, or the Rooneys that kind of stay in the background?
The Rooneys were friends with the players. You know, you conversated with them on day-in, day-out basis. They just weren't outspoken with the media as far as what they felt like needed to be done. I enjoyed playing for the Steelers and the Rooney family. So I wouldn't want it to be, you know, anywhere else than there. But, you know, Jerry has a different way of operating.
Way to protect that ambassadorship. Yeah, hey, there's too much money going forward to talk about the Rooney.
TJ, you played for Mike Brown, a guy that kind of has a mixed reputation in the league. Would you have preferred to play for someone like Jerry?
It's a funny story. My rookie year, I barely played, and I was drafted late. So I see Mike Brown, and we're walking, and I see him, and people have said Mike Brown does not talk to players. He stopped me, and we were just having a conversation. Literally, after that conversation, it was like vets on the team. Bro, did he stop you and talk to you? What y'all was talking about? Damn, he like you. He don't talk to nobody. And when I left the Bengals and I went to other teams, I kind of missed the dynamic, the family atmosphere that the Bengals had, because you see some, you recognize every, you would talk to Mike Brown all the time. You would talk to Katie Blackburn and Troy Blackburn a lot. You go to these other teams and they just didn't have that type. Me, the way Jerry Jones backs his players, I would love that, because when you go and you don't have that, it just didn't seem right. It didn't feel right.
Well, right. While you're in Dallas that bad that you're the only dude who played for Jerry Jones, you can't even ask him the question.
I know you love Jerry Jones because he put money in your pocket.
He helped me out, man. He helped me out. No, but in all seriousness, Jerry Jones, I think, becomes a target. He puts himself in those positions. We take shots at him. But beyond all the smoke, in the ownership meetings, he is well-respected. He's one of the guys that is leading the charge in many initiatives. And just as a player, you knew every fourth quarter Jerry's going to show up on that sideline like he's another player and another guy with you. So I do love that.
You know what's good about Jerry, too? Think about when they had the uncapped year. Jerry was like, I'm paying my players.
You know it.
I'm paying my players. And the NFL tried to punish him for that. He's putting money in guys' – if uncapped year, I can spend what I want to spend. And he was putting money in guys' pockets, and it was at week nine, like, we're not going to spend any money. But Jerry Jones did it.
Yeah.
And as a player, that's what you want. You want somebody that's going to have your back and pay you. And
all right, listen, we spent the first half of this show talking about one of the biggest Thursday night football games ever. Marcellus clearly thinks it's going to be a blowout.
Spanking.
So I want to have a bet with you, Marcellus, on the game, but I also want to have one with James. I'm going to bet you straight up.
Straight
up. The Cowboys are going to win this game. You set the stakes.
I feel like I need to help you out. So how you feel about 10 anytime push-ups? That means anytime I ask for them, you give me them, whether it's one or two, up to 10 in total.
Anytime. You can just call me middle of the night and I got to do 10.
I got to be there to see it because I don't believe you go, James. Catch you walking out the studio. Hey, give me one.
And it's raining today.
And it's raining. Yes, hands on the ground.
Oh. No problem. We got Cowboys win. You're going to have to give me some points.
Some points?
You're going to have to give me – the line is 7.5.
Okay.
All I need is 4.
All I need is four
points.
You don't want them all?
I don't want them all because I think Dak Prescott and the Cowboys are going to play well. So all I need is plus 4.
Plus 4.
You set the stake.
Oh, you know what I want, what you turn me on to. I want a case of that Casa Dragones.
He gives me 4 points now.
Tequila. Come on, baby.
I'm trying to do the math on that. You got to bet. TJ, if you were here tomorrow, I'd bet you too. Ooh. But we on the same side. We got a case of Casa Dragones riding on the game. James Harrison and TJ Houshmandzadeh are back. Let's move to Cleveland, where Baker Mayfield took some heat this week. First for snubbing Hugh Jackson after the Browns beat the Bengals, and then for talking trash about Hugh to the media, saying his old coach was, quote, fake. Well, if you thought Baker was going to back down from his comments, think again.
People get maturity confused with me being 100% comfortable in my own skin. So that's absolutely how I am. I've always been that way. It's not immature. It's me being exactly who I am every day, being that same guy for our team, and I think that's very important for us right now.
Why did you call him fake?
I don't know. There's just, like I said, there's things that happen inside the building that there's no reason to get into detail with it. We've moved on. We have our coach right now. We have our play caller, and we're having success, so we need to focus on that.
You know, I think some people think Baker's being immature here. I'm to the point where I just think this is just who this dude is. Mm-hmm. You know, he grabbed his crotch in college. He planted the flag. He just wears it on his sleeve. He's almost like Deion Sanders playing quarterback.
Yeah.
And we're just not used to seeing it from the quarterback position. Is it immature? I don't know. Is it cocky? Yes. Baker Mayfield is cocky. And he doesn't bite his tongue. But football will humble you at some point, but and he probably will get humble, but who knows? He may just reinvent what we think of what a quarterback can do personality-wise.
Yeah, his personality doesn't fit the position, and that's what the rub is here. He's not immature. He's just out of position by what's coming out of his mouth. We let receivers be diva and say, oh, that's them. Mm-hmm. We let the linebacker be crazy or stoic. And, yeah, all right, that's who they are. Did I look at you and say,
yeah, yeah.
All right, whatever you want to do. Yeah, by position, we let you be a crazed dog D-tackle. You know, uh-huh. We let you do all that. But when you're the quarterback, we try to look at you and say, you can have game, but no gab. And if you are, what are you, Joe Namath? We've seen moments where it's a Cam Newton. It's moments where early Colin Kaepernick kissing biceps and wearing hats backwards. The game first and stick to the game. So then you get a Tom Brady. You get these guys up there scripted at the podium. I respect the guy who's like, I am busting out of that shell. I am coming out of that shell and showing you me in this position. I love it. He's so authentic because he's like, look, Mike, I can manage both. His quote was, I can manage both. I understand what I'm saying, but I also understand I could play this game. And you're not going to scare me to go back into this shell, even if I'm playing the leader of this team.
I feel like I said, I don't think it's immature. I think he's just being honest about his opinion of how he feels about someone. Me knowing Hugh personally, I feel like that's way out of place. I've never had a situation where I felt like Hugh Jackson was fake. So he may have got, like TJ said earlier, some misinformation from another source, and he's going along with that, and that's why he believes he may be fake. Because to be fake, that means I'm telling you something while you know or believe that I'm saying something else somewhere over here. So. Like I said, that's just how he feels. That's his opinion. I have strong opinions on, different coaches too. But for me to come out and just, be like, hey, I believe this guy is fake, I don't feel like it would be, like, right to do it. But I'm not going to put my business in the streets like that.
Before you respond, TJ, and I know TJ and Hugh are friends, I think Baker may be saying, Hugh Jackson has said, hey, I'm a Baker Mayfield supporter. I agreed with him as the first-round pick. And Baker may be saying, nah, no, you didn't. You wanted Tyrod Taylor to be the starting quarterback here. Mm. You didn't really believe in me. The things you're saying publicly aren't backed up by your actions.
And that's fine. But it should have never gotten back to Baker Mayfield. In this coaching profession, you want coaches that know what they're doing, but you want coaches that are loyal to you. And Hugh had a bunch of snakes on his staff. Mm. Because in this meeting, he could have said whatever he wanted to say about Baker. It should have never gotten back to him. And they're watching this, and they know they snakes in the grass because they went behind Hugh's back, probably when Hugh was there, and told Baker X, Y, and Z, and it turned him against Hugh. And so when Hugh was on the verge of being fired, Baker was like, get up out of here. I don't want you here anyway. Because you got coaches on the staff that wanted to be in Hugh's position, and they weren't. So they were trying to tarnish the relationship that Hugh had with Baker. I don't know this to be the case because I haven't spoken with you about this. That's just my, when you call somebody fake, and to get to the question, is he immature? No, he's not. We're just not used to quarterbacks talking like this. They don't act like this. Tom Brady doesn't do this. Drew Brees doesn't do this. They're the best two quarterbacks. They don't act like this. So when a quarterback does act like this, it's like he's just speaking his mind. But what he has to understand is you better continue to play well because as soon as you play bad, you're going to get talked about and you're going to get talked about. If I went against Baker Mayfield, and I actually like him as a player, I like the attitude, but I would hit his ass late as much as I could just because I want to get him out his game because it's going to frustrate him because he wears his emotion on his sleeve. Can I get him out his game? Can I hit him late? Can I trash talk him to make him start playing out of his element? Because when you act like this, that's going to happen when you play a passionate sport. You can get him out his game.
Yeah, man, I loved your take on Hugh and Baker's relationship and what you think – really fueled the word fake.
Dude, it has to.
No, I read something different, which I respect yours as much as mine, probably more. But I read that Baker, you're a different person when you have a job versus you're out there trying to get a job. Mm-hmm. So Baker Mayfield has been spending months with this guy and hearing, okay, he didn't really want to draft me or he didn't really want to start me, but it's okay, we're working together. And then you go on your reputation tour, Hugh Jackson, and all of a sudden, everything we discuss candidly and even in our family business, you have a different pitch because now you're trying to get a different reaction. You're trying to get a different outcome. So now I'm starting to take my own mental notes like, that's what happened? That's how you feel? That's not what I heard? That's not what you told me? And when Hugh Jackson came on here and we kept pressing him and I kept looking at Hugh Jackson and the South Centralness in me just was like, I wanted to go not fake, but I was like, this ain't authentic. Like, but I understood. I stayed back. I was a professional because I was like, this man trying to get a job. I'm not going to go all the way in to get so thorough that all of a sudden he exposes himself and doesn't get that next opportunity. But I'm not Baker Mayfield.
I was under impression from when we were here that Hugh had no say-so in offense. That was all Todd Haley. Can I help the offense? Can you help the offense? I'm going to help the it was – That was Todd Haley's offense. Mm. Hugh had no say-so in the offense. That was all Todd Haley. So, if anything, Baker Mayfield, be mad at Todd. Nobody has talked about this on TV. When Todd Haley got fired, he said, I was surprised because I thought I would be the interim coach. Nobody talked about that. That makes me go, you thought you would be the interim coach? You the snake.
TJ, I think you're right.
And that's just speculation on my part.
I get it. I think you're right. But I'll say this about Hugh versus Baker. Baker Mayfield has to understand, because he seems to be upset that Hugh immediately went to the Bengals. And that's part of the thing he thinks. You've been in our locker room. How are you going to go to one of our rivals? We play twice a year. And that's where I think Baker has kind of messed up. Because I'm like, well, hold on, man. Hugh got a family.
Mm. Was that a cover-up, though?
Thank you.
Well, that was a cover-up.
Don't read into that anything. That was just for the fans
That was deflecting.
Yes.
The real thing was there were things that happened inside the building that I'm not going to get into. Going to the Bengals, he was just deflecting.
Yep.
He was trying to throw people
off.
That was easy. That's all that was.
He knew that was the only way that people going to digest that. Yeah,
I'm with TJ now. So now I'm thinking, like, yeah, he want to – flash it off to this, but then he says there's things in the building that happened. Why can't you tell me what the things are in the building that happened? Because maybe somebody else.
His quarterback coach is Ken Zampezi that Hugh brought. He ain't going to be disloyal to Hugh. I'm just saying. I haven't talked to Hugh about this. Mm. I don't know this. I like Baker Mayfield. I hope he does well because he has a chip on his shoulder. But if I'm a defensive player, I'm hitting him late at least two or three times a game.
Expose that emotion, huh?
Yeah, start playing crazy. It's going to give us a game.
You're going to get fined. James is the king of that. You're going to get fined. We're joined now by Fox NBA analyst Jim Jackson. Let's move to the NBA, where there's more drama brewing for LeBron James and the Lakers. Reportedly, LeBron has been running the point, he's been ignoring Luke Walton's play calls and running the plays he prefers, so much so that Walton has stopped sending plays in when LeBron is on the floor. This is not a good sign for the Lakers coach, in my opinion. I've always felt Luke's days were numbered once LeBron showed up because this is what LeBron does. He tries to grind out whoever the head coach is till he gets the head coach he wants. Couldn't do it to Eric Spoelstra because Pat Riley wouldn't allow it. But everywhere else, LeBron's been able to grind out the coach and get the coach he wants. And this is what you got to deal with when they started the offseason talking about Luke hadn't talked to LeBron. It's been 3-4 weeks since LeBron's been hired. You knew it was only a matter of time.
Man, talk about it, brother. that conspiracy theory, shout out to my man Frank Harris, a contributor to the conspiracy theory who actually originated it. And I was like, dog, this is real. And I've been just reading the tea leaves ever since. And boy, I want to paint the other side. Because I already said the conspiracy theory. You just echoed it. Luke Walton, you're not long for this job. I will say that I played with the late, great Junior Seau, who would buck plays left and right. And part of his greatness was, I'm going to go out there and do it, because no matter who's coaching me, I'm out in the front lines and I got this. And I'm going to go out there and do this. So, and it was a great thing for our defense, even at times when you didn't know where he was coming from. And I see LeBron paralyzing his teammates in the same way. They don't know what plays they're running either, because LeBron is on LeBron mission. And a couple of Lakers are frustrated. I do know this for a fact, because he doesn't get reprimanded when he bucks the system, and it doesn't always work. Look at their record right now, 11-9. And then you also look at LeBron when he does it right, and then the other players are sitting there like, I don't know what's going on, so that's why I'm not contributing. I'm out of sync. So, Luke, keep the house in Manhattan Beach, wherever you don't move, but you're going to be gone soon.
I don't think he's leaving, but we got to back up, because – LeBron, early in his career with Paul Silas, respected Paul Silas. He really did, but he was young. With Spoelstra, he did push back early on. Yeah. Because, you know, Spoelstra was my film guy at Miami when I was there. So he pushed back on it. Finally, he had confidence in him, and he listened to him. When he went back to Cleveland, I think the straw was when David Black called a play, end of the game play, out of bounds, and he had LeBron take it out. And LeBron, like, come on, man. I got to have a ball in my hand. That's when the respect went out the door. So LeBron has been in these situations where if he doesn't trust you early on as a young coach, then he's going to take over. But that's nothing new. I remember sitting on the plane talking to Norm Nixon, and they were saying when Pat Riley came in to the fold, that Magic and them, they were, listen, Pat, just sit down. We got this. Don't worry about it. We're going to call what we want. Gary Payton, when he was with George Karl in Seattle, he would tell George, now they had a special relationship, but it was like, listen, I'm on the court. I'm the general. I know what's going on. Allow me to run the offense. But that comes with the level of trust. The coach trusts that player will do the right thing. And the player at one point is going to trust the coach that what he calls is going to work. So it goes both ways. So I can see with LeBron and what's going on and guys being frustrated. Look, dog, it's part of playing with greatness because, you know, Ingram at times probably feels stymied. I'm sure Kuzma at times feels stymied, but this is what you get when you play with a guy like LeBron. The other end of it, you got to give up a little bit to get a lot. And the lot is you're on a national platform with a chance to do something
But this
special.
Is not standard issue. Everything you said was correct, except these dynamics are different.
Why?
You ready?
Yeah.
Tell me, could you trust and respect someone who's coaching you that got drafted in the same year you did, but you were the top pick and he was 32nd? In your draft, Jimmy.
I didn't say he got to trust him, right? I don't think Luke's going to be there long term.
36.
This year, you got, he's there.
You my coach, but you got drafted after me. So,
and I'm still hooping.
Do you understand what that is?
No, I get it, man.
I don't think that's the issue, though. I really don't. I think the issue from Luke's perspective and even the organization's perspective is LeBron's style is not a development style. It doesn't help people develop. It will help you win right now. That's it. But show me the young player that LeBron developed. Some people might say it's Kyrie, but Kyrie ran away and left. Again, LeBron has a win now style of play. It's not a, hey, this Brandon Ingram's going to develop under this. Lonzo Ball's going to develop and get better. It's a win now style. And Luke Walton probably bought into, hey, we're going to develop these young guys, and that's kind of what the organization wants to do. But what LeBron wants to do at 34 and every day of the last 10 years is win now. I got to chase down Jordan.
But you know
I
what,
need
though,
more titles.
The Lakers need to be careful, though, because you can't put the house all on the line for 2 years. And the reason why I say that is because you got to be able to plan for post-LeBron. That's why I think everybody's
LeBron talking ain't.
About, well, that's okay. I think everybody's talking about Bradley Beal, go get him. I'm like, well, I think the long-term plan for the Lakers is to have somebody carry the torch once LeBron is gone. Yeah. And that's an Anthony Davis. So if you go after a Bradley Beal now, you're giving up valuable assets that you could utilize next year, even though Anthony Davis is a restricted free agent, that you can use for trade bait. If you go after Bradley Beal now, that's not getting you closer to the championship. Right. You want to be able to have somebody in the fold post-LeBron that's going to carry the torch.
That's not LeBron's concern.
But this is what I'm saying about management. That's why I don't think management is going to react to a lot of the stuff that's going on, even with LeBron. Magic and Pelinka are in there for a reason to grow this thing and try to win in the next couple of years with free agents coming out next year, but then also have a long-term plan post-LeBron. You got to have it. And you look at what happened when LeBron has left teams, the attrition part of it is they went down. The Lakers don't want that to happen.
But it has happened on the Lakers' watch, whether it's different management or whatever, post-Kobe hasn't been.
But Magic and Pelinka weren't there.
Right. So
see, it's a whole different philosophy now.
You can go in with LeBron's like Mike Tyson or whoever said you have a game plan until you get hit in the mouth.
Right.
And then all of a sudden it all falls apart.
Right.
You can have the greatest game plan, but when LeBron starts stomping his feet and I want this and I want that, you're going to react. It's everybody else has done it. It's going to happen with the Lakers.
Call him again. Say it again. LeBron.
Time to get antisocial. My favorite segment. All right, our social media manager, Darnell Smith, is here to tell us what's popping on them Twitter streets.
What up?
What's up, Darnell? What's cracking out there?
Man, we're going to start off out here in Hollywood, where Denzel Washington stopped by to talk to the Lakers the other day. And LeBron posted this Instagram celebrating Washington, calling him the GOAT and a living legend. So I've got a good barbershop question for y'all. Who's had the better career, Denzel or LeBron?
That's a good one. That's a very good one. But it's easy for me. Denzel, man.
Facts.
What?
Denzel, man. What? Man, from Training Day to Say American Gangster to play Malcolm X. Yeah. I mean, wow. He's won the Academy Award.
You're just shooting off the hip right here. Right. Let's look at this scientifically. First of all, the most respected entertainers in the world are athletes, one. So if there's a tie, you're going to give the love to the athlete. Two, LeBron has not only been the MVP basically every year on every team he's been on and in the league, but he's won championships. Versus Denzel's been the best actor in every movie he's been in, but all his movies haven't been great. Real talk. So LeBron has not been on a sorry team. Except the Lakers right now. But Denzel has had...
Has Denzel ever quit in the middle of a movie?
Ooh.
Y'all laughing. I'm sure he went to his trailer earlier and was like, pull one of them stunts.
He ain't had one of them Celtics moments, though, where, you know, like, peaced out in the middle of a series.
Right. Look, you're making me take shots at Denzel, and I'm not, because that is my guy, and I love him. He knows this. But look,
name a bad Denzel movie.
Well,
unwatchable.
On top of that.
Unwatchable.
That's the point.
You can't name an unwatchable Denzel movie.
You want to check the IMDb? You want to go there? look, LeBron can't just go out there in a 7-game series, win a championship by just dropping a tear. You know what I'm saying? A little glory tear. That ain't enough. That ain't how you win championships in our game of sports. So entertainers, look at athletes with the most respect.
I can watch Training Day every day of the week.
I'm with you there, though.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
All right, man, we're going to move up to Canada, where Kawhi Leonard is balling this year for the Raptors, but he really got caught people off guard with the decision he made off the court. Kawhi left the Jordan brand and signed a deal with New Balance.
Yep.
Twitter clowned him for the move. Yahoo Sports even tweeted, Kawhi signing to New Balance is the most Kawhi decision a Kawhi has ever made. All right, I don't know about y'all, but I've never personally owned a pair of New Balance in my life. Do y'all like Kawhi's decision here?
Listen, 20 years ago, I did own a pair of New Balance. They were very good shoes.
Yeah.
I got no problem with them as running shoes. I don't know about basketball shoes. But, Marcellus, if I was you, I'd be excited.
Mm.
Kawhi is different, man. He's not afraid to do different things like New Balance, like the Clippers.
What? Like what?
Like the Clippers.
Oh, so we're going to have, Clip City, Chip City, Kawhi. He's bring different. Them New Balances to our old team, and we're going to be... Spoken. Look, I like this. First of all, I hate when people laugh at stuff like this. I don't like y'all. There was a day when people laughed at Nike. Y'all don't remember those days, but there was a day. Exactly. Early 80s, where people were like, those are just running shoes. They're for track runners. And then all of a sudden, booyaka. So I don't laugh at
stuff. Right, was that?
Booyaka. I don't laugh at stuff like
this. Wakanda or Wakanda?
And, you got some vibranium. A lot of people wear New Balance. The blue and gray ones I see a lot of times, especially in New York. And they're running shoes, so I don't expect either one of you guys to know about that.
You have no room to talk.
I don't talk about
you. You flirting with three bills, Marcel.
You ain't lying. Don't let them know. It's the holidays.
Right. I'm making love to it, but go ahead.
All right, y'all. I actually just got some breaking news about Carmelo Anthony, who just signed a 4-year deal with the Golden State Warriors.
What?
No.
I didn't play.
Oh, man, come on, man.
I didn't play. My fault.
This is real TV.
he didn't shoot some hoops at the gym, man, hoping somebody sees the video and signs him. So Oh. I mean, I actually think he's going to play in the NBA again this season. I'd be surprised if he sat out the entire season. But are you guys starting to feel bad about Carmelo Anthony?
To be honest with you, looking at that video, yes. I am starting to feel. And the fact that he's now a joke, that Darnell comes on and starts joking about the time with the Golden State Warriors and all the San Francisco and the Bay Area just almost jumped off a building when they heard that.
You ain't
I feel a little sorry for Carmelo. Goes.
Yeah, man. Look, man, did he have New Balance on? That's the only thing make that worse. Huh? Look, he on that Dez Bryant tour. Remember when Dez, we were like,
Carmelo's Dez. Oh, my God.
Yes.
That's wild.
Right, Instagram and every shot, every Instagram and every route Dez ran, and every shot Carmelo. Look, Carmelo, Mello's my guy, Dez. Respect. He will get another shot.
My God,
team's got to get desperate. You see, I'm taking shots at people and then saying it's my guy.
That's my guy too, man. I'm just playing around.
I love Carmelo. And he will get a chance this year once teams come to their senses and also get desperate. That's how the game goes.
Melo is Dez Bryant.
He is. That's what
I'm going to be thinking about that all night tonight. Oh, my God. He's going to tear his Achilles tomorrow.
Too much.
Right now, what's next?
All right. Y'all remember Sister Jean, right?
Yeah.
Loyola Chicago posted this video of the chaplain who became famous during the team's tournament run last year, getting her Final Four ring. I don't know about y'all, but it's kind of fun to see her back in the spotlight again. She's having a good time, obviously. Are you happy to see Sister Jean back in your life?
I'm sorry. I've had enough Sister Jean.
Sister Jean?
Why they extending her 15 minutes to 30? I'm so glad Zion Williamson is in college basketball because all last year, Sister Jean was the biggest star in college basketball, and that was embarrassing.
You gave Sister Jean put her off.
Man, wait.
Come on, man.
I just had an epiphany. The reason why I am now on this show is for this moment. I've been waiting for somebody to say, hey, man, what's all this Sister Jean talk, man? Last year's tournament, I was like, I'm not going to say anything, but I'm not going to say anything. Like, this is not a story for me. My grandma went to a lot of games. They didn't give her no love. Where her ring at? She was, oh, man, give me some of that Twitter walk one more time, Sister Jean.
Y'all cold-blooded,
man. Yeah. I'm good, man. Come on, man.
Give my grandmama some love. Mama love you up in heaven.
There you go.
All right, Darnell. Last but not least, man.
So watching the herd this morning, my guy Colin was talking about Aaron Rodgers and made a very interesting comparison. Take a listen.
Isn't some of this Aaron Rodgers' fault? You know, well, why does everybody else get blamed? It's turning. The narrative is turning. By the way, this is what you did with Westbrook forever. I get no pushback on Westbrook anymore. People have come to realize Westbrook's hard to play with. I don't get a lot of pushback on Aaron Rodgers. In the last 2 weeks, I don't get a lot of pushback. People are like, he's difficult.
Is this a fair comparison?
No. Aaron Rodgers has a title. has a Super Bowl ring and title. I don't think you can put him in the same boat with Westbrook.
Different paths, but certainly Aaron Rodgers. Welcome to the unveiling of who Aaron Rodgers is. If people who have evaluated him since college said, he's always been difficult to play with. So, to me, this is not a new realization, but... yeah, I think most people understand.
Has anyone ever said Russell Westbrook's the best to ever play his position?
No.
They say that about Aaron Rodgers. People say that.
Yeah.
I just don't think you can put him in the same
boat. But in terms of difficulty to play, yeah. They got that in common.
Time for the approval ratings for Dak Prescott. And of course, we let Uncle Jimmy back again today. Where are you going today? What are you wearing?
First of all, let me tell you where I'm not going.
Yeah, where are you not going?
I'm not going to fight.
You're not going to fight.
No, I'm the one that's outside the ring to say, hey, you can do this more. Go ahead, go back. You know, which is a good job. You know, that's a gig for me. You know what I'm saying?
And collect that spit.
That too.
That's you.
You look like Boudini Brown. You remember Boudini Brown?
Man,
Muhammad Ali's hype man.
Ali.
Hey, you kind of look like him.
Matter of fact, come to think of it, yeah, I know him. That might have been... one of my step, okay.
Yeah. One of your stepkids, huh? All right, let's see a highlight from our discussion earlier today about Dak Prescott and the Cowboys. Tonight's Saints-Cowboys clash feels a little bit like the original Rocky movie. Think about it. Mm. Dak Prescott is Rocky Balboa, a struggling tomato can being fed for slaughter to one of the all-time greats, Drew Apollo Creed Brees.
I'm hopeful. I'm certainly rooting for this. I need to see the haymakers, and not in the closing rounds, in the opening rounds. I need Dak to go for broke. This is the perfect opportunity for Dak to say, let me bust out my shell and show you what I'm really worth. And if he doesn't show it tonight, I don't know when Dak will ever show that sixth gear.
All right, Uncle Jimmy, that was our discussion about Dak Prescott. I analogized him to Rocky Balboa, Drew Brees to Apollo Creed. What's your take?
Well, first of all, I ain't never watched no Rocky Marciano movie.
What?
You know? Yeah, for you to sit up there and ask me about that, you know, I don't watch that mess, man.
It's a different Rocky.
It's about Rocky Marciano.
Oh.
And I ain't doing all that. I know for a fact, unlike you youngsters know, but I know for a fact it's all propaganda. See, that's all it is. It's all propaganda. Everybody know that the government paid Joe Louis to take a fall when he was fighting Rocky Marciano.
What?
They paid him to take that fall.
Who said that?
When he was fighting Rocky Marciano.
First of all, Rocky is a movie about Rocky Balboa.
Thank you.
Not Rocky Marciano.
Listen to Nephew.
Yeah.
Was he fighting a man with a little Jerry curl? That was Joe Louis. This movie's about Rocky Marciano. I'm for real, man.
Tell us your opinion on Dak Prescott. We're asking you about Dak Prescott, not Rocky Marciano.
Oh,
thank you.
All right, sorry about that. Listen, first of all, let me tell you something. Y'all do know that Sinbad is Dak Prescott's daddy.
Man.
Right. Nah, for y'all do know that, right?
On that boat.
For real. No, Sinbad from Mississippi. Dak played in Mississippi. I got people from Mississippi by way of Hattiesburg. That's how I found out all of that right there. You understand what I'm saying? See, and what you can't do, man, for real, man, you can't let the fact of Dak's hairline, you can't let it fool you. You understand right. What I'm saying? Don't let it fool you. Because, see, Sinbad wear a rug.
Okay?
Sinbad's hairline is
Jimmy.
Worse than LeBron's.
Uncle,
you understand what
please,
I'm saying?
We asked you a question about Dak Prescott.
We did.
What do you think of Dak Prescott as a player?
What the hell have I been telling you? I don't like Sinbad. Look, man, I like the originals. I like Eddie Murray, Richard Pryor, Eddie Griffin, David Chappelle,
yeah.
Pootie Tang. I like them, man, you understand? Dak just Sinbad.
What's Sinbad do to you?
He just Sinbad. He ain't nothing special, Marcellus.
Sinbad
I think
show?
He kind of agree with you.
Yeah.
I think he kind of
agree. That's nothing special.
Yeah. And according to these approval ratings we have here today, we kind of agree with Uncle Jimmy.
Yeah, look at
because
this.
I got him at a 57 today,
yeah.
Which is up 11 points. His job performance has improved since the last time we rated Dak. I got him at a 14. All-time greatness, I brought him up a point to a 3. Character at 22, I still like. His character authenticity stays at an 18.
Yep.
Total of 57.
Yeah, man, I doubled his job performance. He was playing some bad ball. Jerry Jones went out there, publicly supported him. Next thing you know, he's balling a little bit. But still in the Sinbad world, I guess, Uncle Jimmy. Respect to him, me and you pretty much identical.
I can't believe this. This is the first time we've ever really agreed.
Yeah, this is as close as it's going to get. Yeah?
Yep.
And that's a role player. And you've been talking about him closer to being an all-star.
No. I'm saying tonight.
Tonight.
He's going to play like an all-star. And when we come back tomorrow, I'm going to have his ratings up higher. Because tonight.
I want some of that drink.